I remember there were people who'd show up at his house, people looking for help, and they would have been repeaters, so to speak. But Eamon would always be trying to find some way of assisting them, and he might send them down to me in the social services and say, do what you can for these people. They'll give them a hand. It was that, he had an open-handed generosity about that. I saw him also, you know, Chokra, for God's sake, that's a real example of, he was the first director of Chokra, and he travelled much around the world and did a lot of good work. I remember him telling me about somebody in West Limerick contacting him. This lady was making jam in her home. Whatever was it, new legislation was coming on stream so that you wouldn't be able, she used to make it for selling, and so that she wouldn't be able to do that anymore. And Eamon, again, he got so up about bureaucracy taking over again Europe. He said, Kevin, there's a fella I know in Europe, in the EU, and I want you to write to him. I remember writing to the man. I don't know what the outcome was, but he was like that. If he'd get a bee in his bonnet, and he'd go after it. Indeed, I remember a story he told me about Chokra. I had a meeting with him that morning at the house, and he said, Kevin, say a little prayer for me. I thought, what's he asking me? And he said, there's a big meeting. I'm going to a big meeting in Maynooth. Apparently, there was a heave within the hierarchy to, I don't know whether they were trying to get rid of him from Chokra, but there was certainly a member of the hierarchy who was very close to John Paul II and would have been favouring very much that Chokra should be doing more doctrinal, you know, giving doctrine and not be going in the kind of what was seen as socialist, communist type of thing. And Eamon felt very strongly, as we all know, about the plight of people who were on the margins. You know, that's, you have to look at his work in England and, you know, in the various other things he was involved with. He was telling me afterwards then that he obviously, he outfoxed them or whatever it was, but he wasn't moved from Chokra. And I don't think that there was a big change in Chokra as a result, but he held his ground. And he was able to talk about, he mentioned the bishops who were backing him, and he mentioned Kilmore, which is my own home diocese, that Kilmore backed him, and I knew the bishop at the time there had been a classmate of his. But he was a good strategist too.
Do you remember the morning that the announcement was made?
Oh gosh, yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
I remember, like all the world, so to speak, wakening up that particular day and hearing the announcement that the Bishop of Galway had resigned for personal reasons. I was blown away. And I was in my office upstairs in social services, and I remember somebody knocking the door, and this man came in from the day centre. We had a day centre for the elderly downstairs, and he came in and he said, we'd like to take up a collection for Bishop Casey. He was always a great man to support us. I must say I was very touched by that. And that was the character of the man.
He had a great energy for fun.
Oh, he had wonderful he was. I remember being at a conference in Clifton. I think there was something about social services and stuff. There was big when Charlie Haughey was president of the EU, and there were different functions and stuff. And he came. We went out to the function. We're coming back, and of course there was plenty of food and plenty of drink. And coming back in the car, Eamon, he'd say, "What?" He'd start off a song, and then he'd sing to a song or two, and then he'd say, "And now we'll have a decade of the Rosary." And so it was. He loved fun, and he loved. One of the things that amazed me was that he was, whatever number, over 20 years as a bishop, and he'd come out to the door with me. You know, I remember of a spring morning, and he'd look out and he'd say, "You know, I'm looking forward to start my first confirmations next week." I thought to myself, geez, how can you have so much enthusiasm for something? You know, does it not get stale or whatever? But he loved that. He loved interacting with people. And he was wonderful with children, and, you know, engaging with them. And, you know, it enlivened them.
A lot of people saying he had his flaws or whatever, you know, and he made his mistakes or whatever. How would you see that?
I was in the priesthood for a number of years, and I would say that, you know, that the number of bishops I worked with, none of them would have had the humanity that Eamon had. They might not have been as spontaneous. They were cagier. They were more canon lawyers to follow the book. Eamon didn't follow the book, and, you know, he took risks, and, you know, isn't life about taking risks? The more we know about the church, the more we know about the world, that life is a gift, and you make the most of it, and sometimes it can hurt other people, whatever, but it is a gift, and I have to say, Eamon lived life, and he lived it to the full.
He had a very clear idea about how the statutory and the voluntary ought to relate.
He saw the need and the workability of the statutory and the voluntary, you know, that to encourage local initiatives, to listen to the voice of the people and say, well, this is a service, like, for example, for the situation of domestic violence, to be able to put a service, to sell that to the health board and to get the community, you know, there were people volunteered and helped out in the different services, as well as paid staff. And he effected a very good working relationship with the Western Health Board at the time. I remember giving a talk to the social services, and he really encapsulated that whole thing.
You see, many areas of human need can only be effectively responded to through a marriage of statutory and voluntary. And therefore you need an effective vehicle to bring that about. And that is exactly what the Galway Social Services Council is. It's that vehicle to effectively bring about a marriage, as it were, between statutory and voluntary bodies. But since the most important factor from the statutory point of view is to ensure that the voluntary body has time to research, has time to understand more deeply what it's in contact with, and since above all it's important that it gives us sufficient funding that it can plan over a 4 to 5 year period. That's where I would say statutory have the greatest responsibility. The other partnerships are obviously the 50 organisations that are part of the services. They are partnership with each other to ensure there isn't overlapping, to bring about coordination. Also a partnership, in a sense, with the wider community, in the sense that take the people who deliver the meals on wheels. If they never delivered meals on wheels, they might never even know that there were needy amongst us. But a most important partnership is with the people, in fact, that we help, the needy themselves. We have a grave responsibility, both in the individual organisations that make us up and also within ourselves, to listen to and to understand fully what their true and real needs are, and then to communicate that effectively to those who are responsible for policy and for resources.